everyone, it's Fahan, and you're listening to the Nissan Best Tea Talk Podcast. Hope everybody's doing well, ready to start your Friday. Alhamdulillah, it's Jumma today. And we're here to recreate, in podcast form, what happened last year at my local mosque sister circle, where a few of us got together and I was able to run a session on all things halal personal finance. Whether it had to do with budgeting, halal investing, pensions, we covered all of it. And at the end of the session, I asked my sisters to leave me with what further questions they had so that I could cover it with you in podcast form. So thanks so much for joining me, and let's get started. Hi everyone, assalamu alaikum. Welcome back to the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about Islamic bonds. The question this week specifically asks, I would like to know more about sukuk funds, as it's an area I haven't heard much about. So yeah, sukuks are effectively Islamic bonds. And if we think about ourselves as an investor, and we think about what is it that is out there for people to invest in, we're asking ourselves, what are the different asset classes? What comes to mind is property, stocks and shares, cash, precious metals like gold, commodities like investing in crude oil, as well as bonds. So bonds are simple interest loans where someone gives someone a loan, and in return for that loan, they receive regular payments in the form of interest. And as we know, interests are impermissible for Muslims, which is why we have Islamic bonds. And Islamic bonds are called sukuk. Now, why is it that if we're saying that, you know, bonds are haram because they involve riba, and as Muslims, we're to avoid riba, and therefore we're not going to invest in bonds. But if we take a step back and we think about what is a bond as an investment, what is its risk and return profile, it's less commonly known under another terminology, which is a fixed income instrument. So in terms of all the jargon, the opposite of a fixed income instrument is equities, stocks and shares. And so it's useful, I think, in this episode to just go to think about Islamic bonds as a fixed income instrument. But why would we want to invest in a fixed income instrument? What is the purpose that it serves? It's actually in the name. It's fixed income, meaning that you know what you're going to be earning over the period that you've made that investment in the form of fixed income, fixed returns, fixed payments over a period of time. But instead of structuring these payments as interest, Islamic bonds allow Muslims to have investments that have fixed income properties. But instead of structuring it as a loan, sukuks are what's called an asset-backed investment, where effectively investors take on ownership of an asset and lease it out to the person who is looking to have this funding, this investment. And in return for having use of that asset, they're going to give investors a regular profit in the form of a rental payment. And the sukuk market itself is growing. Nowadays, there are many options, including through your normal stocks and shares ISA, for you to have sukuks be part of a portfolio. And even if you're someone who uses a robo-advisor, so for example, something like Wahid Invest, they will tell you that they invest part of, depending on the risk profile that you choose, your portfolio will have a certain amount of sukuks in there. They serve the purpose of acting like a fixed income instrument, and as a result, they have a different return profile to equities. You can already tell that you're taking on less risk because you are capping your own returns, because you're only going to be receiving a fixed payments over that period of time. And because that risk profile is different to equities, what you're doing to your portfolio is you're diversifying. So when I was thinking about how is it that I will go into the topic about sukuks in this episode, I'm going to structure it in three parts. So the first is we're going to talk about why diversification is important and why are we actually interested in learning about the properties of Islamic bonds instead of avoiding bonds altogether. How is it that we can structure it so that it acts like a fixed income instrument for us to have exposure to this asset class? And then we can go into more detail about what makes sukuks different to normal loans. The key difference is the fact that sukuks are what's called asset-backed, meaning that there is an actual asset of value that investors are giving to someone to use, as like someone who might be renting someone a house. And thirdly, exactly how is it that in practical terms can Muslims invest in sukuks, and what are the options that you may have yourself, whether you choose to go with a robo-advisor where you're just choosing a pot of investments, or you have your own stocks and shares ISA through Hargreaves Lansdown and you want to buy into a sukuk fund as part of the exposure of your own investment portfolio. So without further ado, I'll just go into the purpose of Islamic bonds. Sukuks are effectively Islamic bonds, and bonds are, whether they're structured as a simple interest payment or as a sukuk, they're what's called a fixed income instrument. Now, bonds, just to define bonds in general, how do they come about? It's when, for instance, a government or a company asks people for a loan, and in return for the loan, they agree to pay a certain amount throughout the life of the loan. And at the end of the loan, they also give back the principal, so the amount that was loaned to them. But when someone does that agreement itself is what involves riba. And as a result, as I said, it's impermissible in Islam. But what is it about fixed income instruments that make them useful? So when we say that, we're focusing on their return profile. And when going into more detail about the return profile, we're just looking at, it's useful to just think about what is your upside and what's your downside. So when we're talking about stocks, your upside is unlimited and your downside is equally unlimited. It could go to zero. And why is that? Is because when you own a stock or you're invested in an index fund, you are a part owner of that company. So you're a part owner of the growth that that company is going to put out into the world. And equally, if the company goes bust, that part of your investment will also go bust. But if we think about bonds, Islamic bonds specifically, sukuks, what you have is a fixed return, meaning that your upside is capped at the rental payment structure that was agreed. You're going to be receiving a fixed amount over the period of that lease. Similarly, when people agree to loans, they are agreeing to a specific percentage throughout the life of the loan. And that's kind of what makes it kind of a diversifier to equities. It offers an alternative investment that is more stable than equities. As a result of having part of your portfolio invested in fixed income, you're signaling to yourself that you are trying to mitigate the overall risk in your portfolio. Whilst, of course, we are investing for growth, depending on our risk profile and risk tolerance, the amount of our portfolio that will be invested in bonds, Islamic bonds relative to equities, will differ by our risk profile. So yeah, when you're thinking about it, and when I think about it as someone who is investing money for decades, we're talking about my own retirement or, inshallah, my future kids' university, because that's like a couple of decades away. I'm able to invest more in equities relative to fixed income. Nevertheless, I do have fixed income as part of my portfolio because it's not 100% equities. I mentioned several rule of thumb when you're thinking about your own asset allocation. Some people say it's just your 100 minus your age. So if you're 30, 70% of your portfolio allocation should be in equities relative to bonds or safer assets. You could also just say it's 100 minus 20 minus your age. So that if you're 30, it should be like 90% should be in equities, but the kind of bog standard asset allocation is usually 60-40, which is like 60% equities, 40% other things. And then, you know, and then other things could also include gold. It couldn't include other investments too. By looking at investments in terms of their return profile, we can start to appreciate the importance of having a diversified portfolio, and we can then also appreciate the importance of the value that fixed income instruments can serve. And alhamdulillah, we are able to structure these as Islamic bonds, as sukuks. So how does a fixed return look like for Muslims? Just to summarize, instead of fixed returns via interest, you're getting fixed returns through rent. So in terms of a formal definition, a sukuk, rather than paying interest on a loan, you're giving investors ownership over an asset that is then leased back to either a government or a company, and in return that government and company will pay regular installments of profit in terms of their rental payments. That's the profit that the investor is getting. There are many different structures to different sukuks, but in keeping this high level, that is effectively how the sukuk is structured. And so the second part, I just wanted to kind of go into more detail about the difference between a simple interest loan and a sukuk. So going into the properties of a sukuk, so we've said that it's a fixed income instrument, and I really want to emphasize the use of the word fixed income because it allows you to make it a fair, like a proper comparison to other asset classes compared to maybe gold, which instead is looked at as a safe haven asset, so something that holds its value, or compared to equities, where we know that you're effectively a part owner in that company, so you share in their successes and the downside is also unlimited. But instead, with a sukuk, its main property is the fact that you're receiving fixed returns in the form of regular rental payments. So as an investment, first of all, you've got a payment stream that is predictable. Second, it is still an investment. The purpose for why the government or these companies are paying you for the rent is because they are going to be using that asset to help them further their business or provide government services. It is important to remind yourself that it is an investment that you're giving to another party. But thirdly, the risk profile is less compared to equities because the fact that you are capping your returns. Because your risk profile is less, your return is also less. But beyond these three points, it's the last point, which is the most important one, and the key differentiator between a normal loan and a sukuk. I touched on this briefly, but it's the fact that it's asset-backed. The investment is structured so that you are the one that has ownership over the asset that is being used. Your investment is effectively allowing someone else to make use of that asset, and they pay you for that use in form of rent. But what that also means is that that asset itself could grow in value too, or it could go lower in value as well. You know, your principal is tied into an asset. The same way someone might buy a house, yes, they bought the house for the sole purpose of leasing it out to someone, and that person is paying them money. It's not like their house is sitting in cash. It's not like their main principal investment is sitting in cash. It's actually tied to the house. That's important to bear in mind. In terms of what's next, just with any investment, it's important to think about what is your downside. So we know that the upside is the fact that we're getting these fixed payments. The downside with fixed income is, what if those returns don't come, in the sense, what if that person doesn't pay rent? It's called the risk of default. And if, for example, it is a company that is at risk of default, and they have sukuks as part of the way that they get money from investors, you would be the one that would get paid first, as in they'd have to return, as they liquidate that company, they have to pay back the people who owed them. So that's kind of what the main risk with fixed income instruments are. It's the risk of default. The second one is also just to make sure that you understand that your capital itself is at risk. It's not like you just put money in cash and as a result you're getting these fixed returns. You've been part of an agreement that has taken over ownership of an asset and as a result is able to then lease it out to people for its use. And thirdly, often sukuks are denominated in US dollars. So if you are someone who's investing in GBP, you also have that currency risk, which is useful to keep in mind. We've kind of touched on that when we think about choosing which halal index fund to choose. We want those that are denominated in GBP, in Great British Pounds. But with Sukuk, I'll talk about the most popular fund, like the largest Sukuk fund that exists, and that one is denominated in US dollars. So you are actually taking on some currency risk there. I find that it's super helpful to just think about breaking things down in terms of the risk and return profile, just so that you then become more familiar with how the asset class is working itself, rather than thinking about the investment. You're just thinking of yourself as an investor who wants to gain exposure to different asset classes so that you can make your portfolio diversified. And to do so, to get your head around it, it's important, I feel, to just appreciate the various properties of the different asset classes. So appreciating that a sukuk is effectively an asset-backed investment where you're taking over ownership of an asset, and in return for that, someone is paying you a fixed return for the use of that asset, and at the end of the period you're getting your principal money back, as well as the fact that over the time you've earned profit by putting that asset to useful use, compared to a simple interest loan, which of course is structured as a riba agreement. Instead, here I think the most useful comparison is when someone does a buy-to-let. You can almost ask yourself, what do you think are the most common sukuk style of investments? And it's the sort of sectors such as infrastructure or ports or transportation, that kind of thing, where there are identifiable assets that people can use to back the sukuk and that people can pay for the use of to grow their business. Or if you're a government, to improve the services that that country offers. So this brings me to the last part, which is, how is it that you invest in sukuks? Because the question itself asks about sukuk funds. So you'll be pleased to know that it's not that you are yourself looking for thousands of other people and agreeing to buy a port and then leasing it out to, I don't know, a government in the Gulf. It's not like that. The same way you wouldn't be investing in a single stock, you wouldn't just be investing in a single sukuk agreement. I like to keep things super simple. You won't even be surprised if you hear me say that, you know, I invest in sukuks through my Hargreaves Lansdown account. If you are someone who uses a robo-advisor and they, like for example, Wahid Invest, they tell you this is the amount of percentage that your portfolio has in sukuks. I don't have an account with them, but if I were you, I would check which is the underlying sukuk that they invest in. Now, the sukuk fund that I invest in is called the Franklin Templeton Sukuk Fund. They are the most prominent sukuk fund. This is just for educational purposes. And so if you go on the Hargreaves Lansdown website and you look at the key investor information document, the description there will tell you exactly what is it that they're investing in. And they're investing in Sharia-compliant assets that are income-producing, meaning that they are various sukuk contracts, and they include both government and corporations. The purpose of investing in a fund is similar to that of investing in an index fund. You are effectively investing in a basket of sukuks, the same way that you would be investing in a basket of stocks. And so what would be the fees involved in this? They would be exactly the expense ratio. Now, here you're not actually paying for someone to choose the investment for you. You're not even paying for a robo-advisor who might be charging a fee on your account depending on how much you have. You're paying for the expense ratio of that particular fund. And so it's useful. I think Hargreaves Lansdown has like an illustration of how much fees you'd be paying for the particular amount that you're investing in. And the expense ratio, you want to make sure that it is not too high. That expense ratio is what is useful to pay attention to. Now, the same way, it doesn't, you know, because you're invested in a fund of sukuks, you won't be able to track the performance of the individual contracts. You'll be able to see, though, what are the different sukuks that are invested in, like the top 10, the same way you can see the top 10 stocks and shares that make up a particular index fund. You can do the same with the Franklin Templeton sukuk fund. But the reality here is that you are effectively giving yourself exposure to the sukuk market by investing in like a large sukuk fund. So that's kind of the thing that I would bear in mind. And the only other thing about the expense ratio I would say is that when you're making an investment, the same rules apply as you would be doing with stocks and shares. You want to first of all make sure that you're investing through a tax-efficient account so that your returns are not taxed. And the good thing here is that they are available through stocks and shares ISAs. Even though they're called stocks and shares ISA, you can invest in various types of asset classes. So your investment account, and equally it should be for the long run. It should be for at least 5 years, and it should be money that is not your emergency fund and that you have no debt when you do that. I do hope you found this episode interesting. I enjoy it when we talk about the different asset classes and how they differ among one another. I feel like it helps make you a more confident long-term investor because you're effectively just investing in different parts of the economy. You're investing in different asset classes that move in different ways, and you're investing in such a way that it is aligned to your own risk profile and the stage of life that you're in. When you're thinking about in decades term, of course, you want your investments to grow and you're able to take on more risk. If you're able to take on less risk, that will change how much of the various asset classes that you have invested in. So thanks so much for joining me. This has been the Nisa Invest Tea Talk podcast. I will see you next Jumma. Bye for now.